Norman Stories, written by Norman and read by Norman. We have been evacuated from London for 2 years to that remote village in Wiltshire called Chitton. By now, the village children had accepted us and we attended the tiny village school on the green, so different from the large, hideous Victorian school in London that we'd all come from, as everything else was so different or foreign. Of course, it was wartime, and everything was unobtainable. Toys you made yourself, with whatever you could find. But as we never seemed to have anything very much anyway, there was nothing to miss, really. So wartime was not very difficult for us children. Birthdays and Christmas were different, because then you would expect a present, a secret present. So my next story is a story of my 9th birthday. It's called The Tent. It was not an ordinary tent. Well, how could it be? Sent to me by my parents in the early years of the war while I was evacuated. Toys you improvise from whatever sticks, stones and nails were available. So when the Great Western Railway lorry pulled up on the village green and out jumped the driver with a large brown paper package, I knew the present could not be ordinary. I had no idea what it was. For 3 days I waited for my birthday, as it sat there in Mr. and Mrs. Windsor's bedroom to be peeped at while they were out in the garden. I actually touched it once, in my impatience to discover what it was. But the packing was too thick, and I was left to my guessing again. Every boy in the village knew about it and wanted to know what it was, and we spent our spare time discussing it. I had already sent a list of things that I wanted for my birthday, and it could be any one of them, or none. We sat around dreaming and fantasizing about all the presents we hadn't yet got. When the day did arrive, and I tore off the brown paper, it was none of the things that we had thought about. It was far, far better than we could possibly imagine. A tent. A place where we could hide and do our things. A headquarters for our games. And best, we could sleep out anywhere. Stay away for days. Run free, have fires. Cook our own food and stay up late. I'd been given a whole new world. The other boys were as excited as I was. And as we rushed out of the cottage and lay it on the grass, I became very possessive and gave orders about not getting it dirty. And as we started to erect it, I bossed the others into holding the tent post straight and erect and got angry and frustrated when it wouldn't go up properly and was told by the others what to do. But at last, it was up, erect, taut and shining white. We dashed through the flaps, a handful of skewers for the final touch, and then lay on our backs, looking up at the glaring white, making plans for our first camp. When we announced that we would go the next weekend, we were met by an adult no. We were too young. The pleading began. A compromised tent out in the garden was turned down by us flat. It was not what we had in mind. How could we do all the things we wanted to do under the eyes of grown-ups? We might as well stay in our beds. We pressured and threatened, were good and bad in our frustration, until we heard the magic maybe. A crack had appeared in the defence, and we knew we had won. Angels have nothing on children who wanted something as desperately as we did. Errands were done at double speed, and we went to bed at the first telling. 2 older boys, 11 and 12, would be coming with us. And that made 5. And we had to find a camp not too far. It was agreed. and we knew just the place. Gear was collected, pots and pans, food was worked out to the meal, and was put away in boxes and bags, ready to be carried off to the campsite, 2 miles away, by a fir wood on a hill. Cigarettes thrown from GI tanks were packed, blankets rolled up and tied on our backs. We carried everything that we wanted, and a lot more besides. Our minds had been on nothing else except my birthday, and it was a relief to pick up our things and our friends and set off through the village, our arms full, laughing and shouting in our excitement. It was a heavy 2 miles to the wood, and we were hot and panting when we arrived, having run for most of the way. We had decided that the first thing we had to do when the tent was up was to camouflage it. It was wartime, and the white would show up to the German bombers. Already the village had been bombed, and the Home Guard, pitchforks at the ready, expected an invasion at any moment. So the tent was erected, pulled down again, and erected again, until we found the right spot close to the wood. Branches were cut down and dragged until it was almost impossible to get into the tent, let alone see it. Blankets were chosen, a meal was cooked, a lot of bread was eaten. Candles were lit, the tent flaps closed and tied, and cigarettes passed around. It was very, very dark outside, but we were snug, giggling and laughing, playing the fool and talking about the war and the soldiers. As our noise grew less, the outside became even more still, except for the occasional flapping or squawking of a bird in the fir trees, or the sudden hooting of an owl. Our voices had fallen to an occasional whisper. The candle had gone out, and the air had become chilly and dark. Planes flew over, droning their way to Germany and France. Noises for those who live in the country are instinctively recognized and accepted. But suddenly, from the outside quiet and blackness, came a noise we didn't recognize. "What's that?" one of the voices whispered sharply. "I don't know. Go to sleep." We all turned over and tried, but we heard it again. This time no one mentioned it. We just lay there with our eyes wide open, looking at the darkness. Hearts beating, thudding against our chest, waiting for someone to say something reassuring. "I expect it was a bird," someone at last thought out aloud. We closed our eyes and agreed, trying to go to sleep. But the noise came again, clearer. And more than one. Someone leant up on his elbow, as if to hear better, and the others started to stir. All ears ready to catch any sound, hopefully to recognize it. The birds in the wood made a loud chirp, chirp, as if to warn off their mates, and flew off as if escaping from some unknown foe, leaving us lying in the field, helpless in the dark. Planes were still flying overhead, having dropped their bombs on London or Berlin. The noises came again, louder this time, and from another direction. "Sounds like someone's running," the darkness said, and the silence came back, cold and dangerous. It came again, behind us. And nearer, and it certainly was a footstep, no mistake. "I think the Germans have come," I said, as in my mind eye, I'd already seen them parachuting down, landing silently on the hills in their uniforms. "Oh, don't be daft," croaked an older voice. "I think we're surrounded," whispered my older brother. And at that moment, the tent began to shake. Slowly at first, and then quite violently. "I'm off," someone shouted, and the tags were undone, and we were told by the oldest boy to take our blankets, and when the flap was opened, to make a dash for it back to the village. We'd better tell them quickly, having now made up our minds what it was. As I waited my turn, I could see myself rushing in and saving the village. A medal was already on my chest. Head down, I was out in the cold and blackness, running as fast as my legs could carry me, clutching my blanket tightly for safety, not daring to look back in case they saw me. I didn't stop running until I came to the valley, just outside the village. Two boys were already waiting for the others to catch up. "Did you see anything?" I asked, breathlessly. "Well, I saw a German helmet as I came out of the tent," one of the boys said. "There must be thousands of them," the other replied. We could hear someone running along the road, and as they got nearer, we called their name in a low voice, and to our relief, they replied, "Yes." One by one, our friends all regrouped, clutching our blankets, until we were all there. We had decided to tell our foster parent, Mr. Windsor, before the police, as he was a sergeant in the Home Guard and would know what to do. The cottage was in darkness when we arrived. Everyone was asleep, but we woke the sleepers and told them hurriedly what was happening. They seemed, to our surprise, not the least worried about the information we urged on them. In fact, they were quite annoyed. Mr. Windsor got up and lit the oil lamp and groaned that he'd better go and have a look. Mrs. Windsor, meanwhile, bundled us all into two beds, and we gratefully fell asleep. When we awoke in the morning, it was not to the battle we expected, but to Mrs. Windsor's smiling face. She told us our German paratroopers were a herd of cows, and they'd eaten our camouflage.